You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. On a Tuesday morning, Mike McNamara with you. Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio. My thanks to Master Guns retired John Ubaldi for coming on. And now another former Marine joining the program. And Alex Hollings joins us now. So, Alex, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Hey, not too bad. How about you?
I got no issues right now. The we gotta meet you to find out if we can take you seriously. So
That's fair.
So first of all, tell us a little bit about you. Born and raised where?
Well, I suppose I was born in upstate New York, but I was raised a little bit all over. We moved around a lot when I was a kid. And I think that's why I took well to kind of the military lifestyle. I don't like staying in any one place for too long, I guess. I claim Vermont as home, even though, you know, I probably only lived there for about 8 years. It's the place that I'm the most connected to.
Okay. Vermont. So you claim Vermont, and how does the Marine Corps, did you go to college? How does the Marine Corps get on your horizon?
You know, I tried to enlist right out of high school, but I broke my leg, you know, real bad playing high school football. And at the time, it was 2003. And, you know, there wasn't a huge push, you know, and so when I went to the recruiter's office, he was like, you know, we're going to need to get you a medical waiver for all the hardware in your leg. We probably won't even get it. It might not be worth trying. And I just kind of let that dissuade me. And then fast forward a few years, and I started dating this girl that I'm now married to. And I was still thinking of joining the Marine Corps, but didn't really have anything to push me until she got real sick one day. And we didn't have health insurance, so I went into the recruiter's office and was like, hey, you know, if I sign up today, how soon will my health insurance start? And he was like, well, today. And I was like, fantastic. When can I leave? And I left 2 days later, you know. So I got in a little later than most people. I was 21 by the time I enlisted.
Okay. So you enlisted at the age of 21. And are you married? You're married at that point, obviously, for her to get benefits.
I got married in a real hurry, in a hospital, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. I like to claim I did it for her, but, you know, it made me who I am today. I was kind of a punk kid back then, you know, and I needed that kind of structure in my life to get me kind of going in the right direction.
All right. So you joined the Marine Corps, and what year is this?
That was 2006.
So you joined the Marine Corps in 2006, and so what becomes of you? What MOS? What did you want to be in the Marine Corps?
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, everybody says they wanted to go be infantry. And I said that when I went to the recruiter's office.
Yeah.
Probably didn't even really mean it. Just it was what my ego told me I needed to say.
Right.
You know, and my wife was animate that I wouldn't because it was important to her that I go to college, which because she's smarter than me. And but I didn't really end up having much of an option. Because I was trying to enlist in such a hurry, I ended up going in open contract. I got like a CB legal admin option initially, and then that switched up. But I didn't know what my MOS would be, to be honest, until I got out of MCT and went to PA school to be an administrator. And I know administration is not really the sexiest job in the Marine Corps, but, you know, I took to it well. I enjoyed my work. I enjoyed getting to know Marines. I worked in the new joint section in 29 Palms was my first post. So just about everybody who was subjected to living in 29 Palms had to come and see my face first. And it gave me an opportunity to meet every kind of Marine that, you might run across. You know, everyone from privates to generals.
Right.
You know, it set me up for success moving forward. I was able to do a lot of other crazy things. I played for the 29 Palms football team and then the All-Marine squad. I fought on the first, you know, Marine Corps MMA team. Because administration offers you that kind of leeway.
Right.
You know, you don't have a lot of field ops and stuff like that. So, you know, you see those infantry guys, you know, they're coming back in from a week in the field, and then they've got to go play football. You know, us administrators, we got the opportunity to, you know, work out all week and then go play football. So our team was pretty good. You know, so I kind of got the best of both worlds without having to suffer a lot of the real tough field stuff until I went out to I&I duty.
And then, what year do you go to INI duty?
2009. I went to Fort Devens. I was with the 25th Marine Regiment out in Fort Devens, Massachusetts.
Okay. All right. And did you enjoy that? Recruiting duty? I mean, INI duty, it's a little bit different kind of work.
It really is. You know, what I liked about it was it gave me a chance to kind of be the face of the Marine Corps to a whole lot of people who, you know, all they know about the Corps is what they see in the commercials and what they see on TV. And I was one of the NCOs in charge of, like, the KIA notification team, the funeral honors team. There was probably 20 of us all together that we kind of rotate through a lot of those responsibilities. And as tough as it kind of sounds, I probably worked 3 or 4 funerals a week for almost 4 years. And that sounds rough, but to be honest with you, after a while it kind of becomes work. You know, you just kind of go there and you do your job. But every so often you get an opportunity to kind of really make a difference for one of these people who are struggling, you know, either with losing a loved one or, you know, sometimes, you know, they were people who lived, you know, long, full lives, but they didn't know much about that part of their, you know, their husband or their wife's life where they were a Marine. And it gave us a chance to kind of interact with them and show them that part of their life. It was rewarding. It really was.
Interesting. We've talked about people that do casualty notifications and how guys, most Marines run from that job. So it's kind of interesting that you make that point. What about, talk to me about, and a certain amount of detachment I think you have to be able to have in order to do that effectively, yes?
Absolutely. You know, The first thing that they teach you when you start doing funerals and KIA calls is the less you know about the situation, the better for you. You know, you obviously want to be apprised to the point where you can speak intelligently to the family members, but you also don't want to start drawing parallels between, you know, that Marine's life and your own. You don't want to draw parallels between that Marine's loved ones and your own because, you know, it can compromise your ability to help them, you know.
Right.
It's not your responsibility to be there to kind of commiserate. It's more your responsibility to represent the strength of the Marine Corps and the gratitude of the country, you know. And, you know, there's a chaplain there who, you know, he very much can, you know, be like the arm on your shoulder. But for the most part, as the Marines that are present, you know, I was the NCO present, so there was an officer there as well.
Right.
You know, my primary responsibility was really just to kind of maintain as stoic, you know, a mentality as I could to just kind of, you know, I guess to honor the moment as opposed to, you know, the chaplain's job, which was really to try to help them cope with the moment, you know. And that's another thing I loved about the funerals is that, you know, the funeral manual is pretty specific, but funerals themselves are liquid. You know, you have to adjust the manual based on where the headstone is or, you know, where the family might be sitting. But you still kind of have this basic framework that you can use to kind of lose yourself in. You know, I know that I need to execute these movements. I know that I need to do it in this way. You know, and what's important to me is that I represent the Marine Corps as a whole, not a Marine as an individual. You know, and so it really helps you kind of like emotionally shield yourself from some of the tougher ones. You know, every once in a while, though, you know, some will kind of slip through the armor. Sometimes it's kind of hard not to relate to the people that you're working with, you know, and or, you know, especially in situations that comes to suicide, for instance. I've had a few Marines that either worked with me or worked for me that have committed suicide in the last couple of years. And so it always made it hard when we would go and work a funeral for a Marine who had committed suicide, especially a young guy, you know, with a family. You know, it's hard to detach yourself from that.
It's the worst, though. You make it through, you know, you make it through having gone to him, right? You make it through, you know, Iraq or Afghanistan. And for most, you know, a lot of guys, it's multiple times. And then you come home. You won. You came home. You know, you were lucky, you know. And then, you know, and then you can't, you know, you struggle. You know, people struggle to find, you know, to find their place and find their way. And then when they take their own lives, you're like, God, man, this is horrible sitting here because, you know, what didn't we do? What could we have done? You know, how could we have, you know, been there, you know, for our friend? and this guy who, you know, we love so much. So it's just, I think it's pretty close to the bottom of the barrel. But as somebody who's got to be a functioning part of that, I think relative to the Marine Corps, it's we don't want anybody on their own program, right? We're going to do this by the numbers because this is already an unstable enough situation with their grief, the things they're going through, the things that people say, the things we don't know. And so we need to keep this thing bolted down, and everybody's got to stay in their lane. I would imagine that would be the challenging part of doing that on a regular basis.
You know, it eventually becomes kind of second nature to you.
Okay.
You know, the guys that I work funeral honors with, you know, a lot of them, you know, because you're at the cemetery 2 hours prior to the funeral, just making sure that everything is prepared, making sure you have a plan, you know. Some funerals, you know, there'll be nobody else there but, you know, the funeral director, and you present the flag to the funeral director, which for me were some of the sadder ones, you know. But then other funerals, you know, there would be, you know, 1,000 people and all the local news crews, you know, and local police and fire would show up. And those are the times where it really benefits you the most to kind of get lost in the regulation of it. Because, you know, if you start to focus on the fact that, you know, I'm standing here next to this casket, that, you know, there's 1,000 people looking on, you know, here, and it's on TV, you know, and if you start worrying about how you'll perform, you're not going to perform well. But instead, if you stay focused on, we're doing this not just for the man in the casket, but we're doing it for the four people in the front row. You know, you're not folding that flag and executing any of those drill movements for, you know, the anchor who's reporting on, you know, CBS Boston. You're doing it for those four people sitting right there that knew this man, that were closest to him. And it's, as long as you can stay focused on, like, the small picture and on making sure your facing movements are crisp, on making sure that, you know, you're folding the flag in as professional looking away as you can. Because, I mean, you can only fold a flag so many ways, but you kind of try to make your movements almost robotic,
right?
You know?
Right.
And when you focus on things like that, it helps you not get lost in, I guess, the circumstances.
Right. Alex Holling's my guest here. We're talking about his career. So after I&I duty, I&I duty is, for a lot of guys, it's an exit point. And I say that because they're allowed, you know, they're able to get back to be involved in a community a lot of times. So because of the nature of I&I work, they can go back to school a little bit at night and do that. So do you get out after I&I duty? Do you take orders again? What do you do?
Well, you know, that's pretty much exactly how it went for me. But leaving wasn't necessarily my call. As I said, I played football for 2 years, out in 29 Palms. You know, I was on the MMA team out there. You know, I love McMath. I really loved the training, but unfortunately my knees didn't as much. You know, so I ended up having 5 surgeries on, I had a torn abdominal wall, torn up knees, torn up ankle, just from different training rotations. Or at one point I literally just twisted my knee while I was on deployment in Africa, and it didn't seem like anything that really mattered at the time. And I came home to find out that I had torn a ligament. And my knees just, you know, the body was willing all but the knees, effectively. So I ended up being medically retired in 2012. And I went straight from there to college at Framingham State University, which was really what my wife wanted all along. It was for the best for me. Although at the time I didn't see it so much as that, because I wasn't sure what else I could be other than a Marine.
Right.
You know? But, you know, I've always loved writing. And, you know, the Marine Corps deciding that it was done, you know, waiting for me to heal up, actually, you know, was, again, one of the better things the Marine Corps did for me, was because it forced me to go and pursue an education. You know, actually, I just finished my master's degree here a couple of months ago, thanks to the GI Bill, you know. And so because of that, now I have a chance to chase my dream. You know, I'm writing on a military news site. I get to write every day, which is something I honestly never really anticipated being able to do. And it was all, in all honesty, because the Marine Corps was like, listen, we're tired of you being broken. You know, you gotta go. You know, I tried my, I maintained my first class PFT all throughout, and I tried my best to convince them to keep me.
Attaboy, you know, we were all wondering about that.
Yeah.
If you turned yourself into a cheese ball.
my biggest fear throughout all of my surgeries was being seen as a malingerer. It's like the last, it is, not in keeping with my character whatsoever. So I was that guy who, you know, 3 days after surgery was in the gym doing pull-ups with my leg in an immobilizer. You know, and
you were overcompensating for that decision not to become a grunt. Absolutely. Right? Like, hey, come on, fellas. I know I'm an admin guy, but I'm a tough guy too.
I'm probably like the best example of that. I went from being a 155 pound private
awesome.
To a 225 pound sergeant. You know, if there was a supplement on the market, it was in my desk. You know? And which worked out great for football and for fighting. It didn't make me the fastest runner, that's
right.
For sure. But, you know, I used to always tell my guys, you guys will get there first, but I'll kick your ass once I arrive.
There you go. Alex, Alex Hollings, my guest. So you get out of the Marine Corps as what? What's your rank?
I was a sergeant when I got out.
As a sergeant. Former sergeant, United States Marine Corps. Talk to us, how does SoftRep get on your radar, and how do you get into the business of writing?
Well, you know, once I finished school, I had already been recruited by a defense contractor who's, you know, I won't say their name, but, you know, they're a real large organization that makes guidance chips and, you know, radio equipment, things like that, to be an HR manager. And I did that job for probably about 6 months. And during that time, my wife's mother, who was only 54 at the time, was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And, which was, you know, it came as a total shock to all of us. You know, I've been real close with my wife's mother. I've known my wife since sixth grade. You know, I've been close with her for years. And, so my wife left her job.
You're that guy? You're that guy who's still getting in trouble for middle school stuff?
Oh, I am definitely that guy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
So much later, but.
We broke up in middle school, and I'm still not over it, okay? So you're that guy.
Right.
Wow.
That guy.
I've always wondered about that. How does that work?
You know, it's good almost all of the time. You know, most of the memories we have from back in the day are good ones.
Okay.
But every once in a while, I'll be like, yeah, but what about Dawn Gooday?
Really? Are we getting?
I'm like, no, I don't remember her. I have no idea.
Wow.
You know, but basically, when my mother-in-law was also an avid writer, she wrote a weekly column for their local newspaper, and you know, just kind of going through that process with her, we self-published a book of hers, and it kind of reaffirmed for me that writing was really what I wanted to pursue. And so after she passed away, you know, my wife had left her job to go and take care of her mom full time, and we needed to decide what we were going to do from now. And so what worked out very well but may not have, my wife and I rented three huge dumpsters and threw away just about everything we had and moved down to Georgia on kind of a whim because the cost of living is lower down here. And I got into technical writing just as a way in the door. You know, and so I wrote for a long time just like kind of how-to articles that were unaccredited on the internet, you know, just to kind of pay the bills. And then SoapRep, who I followed them on Facebook, you know, they posted, you know, that they were looking for writers. And I honestly thought I didn't have a chance, but, you know, what the heck, I'll give it a try. And so I reached out to Desiree, who's the managing editor.
Okay.
And after speaking to her back and forth a little bit, you know, she gave me a chance to write a column. So my first column was about working on, you know, funeral details. And it was well received by the subscribers at SoftRep. And so I started out as a part-time guy, you know, and after a few months they seemed to like my work, and they brought me on as a full-time contributing editor. So that's really what I do with most of my day now.
All right. So what does a contributing editor do? Do you write?
I do. I'm responsible for four articles per day.
Oh, really?
I'm kind of the new.
Wow, that's like serious work.
It's a lot of content, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, I'm basically the daily news beat writer. You know, SoftRep is primarily a special forces.
Yeah, explain to everybody what SoftRep is for those people who don't know.
So SoftRep was founded by a guy named Brandon Webb, who was a Navy SEAL and a sniper instructor. And, you know, from my understanding, it kind of started out almost like a forum where, you know, special operations guys would get together and kind of discuss their take on the news of the day. And after a while, it kind of grew in popularity to the point where people with no affiliation to the community, you know, the special operations community, were coming there to kind of get a sense of, you know, what Brandon Webb might have to say about, you know, what's going on now in the news. And, you know, Brandon Webb being, you know, a media mogul that he is, realized that there was something marketable about that. So he, kind of shifted it towards being a strictly news site. You know, there's a lot of opinions, there's a lot of op-eds, but most of those that you get are from guys with direct experience in the special operations community. You know, Jack Murphy, who's our editor-in-chief, you know, he's an Army Ranger, you know, New York Times best-selling author. He's actually, I believe he's in the Philippines right now, reporting on location. You know, Brandon Webb, obviously a Navy SEAL. There's a number of other guys. You know, Gio, who writes for the site under the name Gio, spent 26 years in Delta. You know, they're really the toughest, the coolest guys that you can really imagine. And, you know, to be honest with you, really humble. Because when I came in as a Marine administrator, I was like, what on earth will I have in common with these guys? You know, but they were immediately welcoming of me. You know, they seemed to like my writing, which I think that helped. And so for the most part, SOFREF is kind of special operations guys giving you their take on things.
On current events, and they're partial to firsthand reports by people in their community. Is that fair?
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you what, it's one of the things I think we all experience. You're watching the media, and you look at it, and you're like, those guys don't have any idea what they're talking about. And if they don't, how the hell do the American people have a chance? Because that guy's clueless.
Well, you know, that's what I love so much about working with these guys. Is right. That, you know, so in the writer's room, which is kind of a forum that we all use to keep up with one another and, like, the stories that we're working on, whenever there's a new story that's breaking, we always look for that guy who's deployed to that AOR.
Right.
Or we always look for the guy who has a lot of experience with that particular group in Afghanistan and things like that. Unfortunately, you know, SOFREF's kind of writer base is large enough that there are a few things that we don't have somebody who's been directly involved with that, you know? So, you know, my job is primarily to do kind of the daily news beat and op-eds that pertain to things that really, you know, I have experience with. But, you know, as with all things, I have a lane as well. You're not going to see me writing any article about what I think they should change about SEAL training, you know, the same way that a lot of these Navy SEAL guys weren't chiming in about the Marines United scandal because, you know, they understood that someone with more internal experience to the Marine Corps would be better suited for that.
No,
and vice versa.
There's a difference in the cultures. People have asked me, you know, why All Marine Radio? Why not All Veteran Radio? I said, well, I don't want to do All Veteran Radio. And I think that you can certainly do that. I said, but the content to me is extremely watered down. And what I would really like to hear about is my culture, right? I want to hear Marine stuff. I want guys to be able to talk about what you talked about. You know, say I went to INI and not have to stop and say, hey, tell everybody what INI is. Hey, tell everybody what SOI is. So, I mean, this is targeted to our culture, and eventually we'll stand up all Army Radio, all Navy Radio, all Air Force Radio, because I do believe the cultures are different enough and to support that. And obviously, you guys do the same thing.
There's a language all their own that each branch really develops, and I've learned through working with SOFREF that the JSOC guys and the SOCOM guys they have their own language as well. And, you know, there's some carryover between them, but, you know, the same way no one but a Marine would understand if I use the term ladder well or portholes to refer to things in my house, you know, the JSOC guys have terms that I have to Google to pretend that I know what I'm talking about in discussion with them, you know, and then when you talk to the Army guys, they have the same thing, you know, and then the Air Force guys, you know, same story. Everybody's kind of got their own, it's a vernacular, but it's really almost a language. You know, you use the acronyms in conversation so often you forget that they're acronyms and just see them as nouns and verbs, you know. And for someone on the outside looking in, you really kind of have to try to, you know, keep your best translation software, whether it's Google or something else, open in another window to make sure that you can kind of stay on top of it. And when you go kind of branch specific, it gives you the opportunity to speak to people in the language that they're fluent in.
Right.
You know, and I think that's awesome.
No, I'll tell you what, it certainly works for us, because it's our culture, and that's what we're trying to do is create a place that people want. I mean, we're obviously a different version of SOFREP in that our culture is the Marine culture. We talk about the Marine culture. in our own native language, and we hope it's a comfortable place where people want to come and get information, especially when stuff's going on. You know, we have subject matter experts, most of them Marines, that come on and speak our language, and we're comfortable there. It's a warm, safe place for us. And you guys have done a great job. Soft Rep is a huge name in the military media, and it really has become extremely popular with the general public who's discovered it and know that they can go there to hear guys talk in great detail about subjects they're hearing about, maybe very, very, in a very superficial way, in the news. And so you peel it back by going to SoftRep, and they've created a great label.
You know, I appreciate you saying that. I'd love to take credit for it, but honestly, Brandon Webb, Jack Murphy, Desiree,
come on, man,
have done an incredible job.
This is All Marine Radio. Of course you can take credit for it.
Well, you know, I'm always happy to take any credit that I can, you know, but I gotta say, as a guy, I dabbled in websites, you know, for a long time. You know, I've always kind of aspired to be a writer, and so I've had plenty of my own websites that I struggled to get traction behind, you know, and what SoftRep gave me was this opportunity where there was a built-in audience. You know, my first article got read by 3,000 people, which isn't necessarily that much even by my standards today.
But
at the time, that was by far the most people that had ever read something that I had written, you know? And really, all the credit for that goes to, you know, first Brandon Webb. But also, you know, Jack and Desiree do an incredible job of managing the content of the site to make sure that we don't become clickbait, to make sure that we don't kind of fall into those same traps
media
falls into.
I want you to tell everybody what clickbait is, because to be honest with you, I think it's the worst of the worst of the worst. When we've lived a purpose-driven life, the media has a role in this democracy, and especially people that call themselves reporters. So I got to take a break. My guest, Alex Hollings. Alex, when we come back, I want to talk about clickbait, because we have interesting discussions about journalism, which is an incredibly important profession in a democracy, and our observations about it, why veterans need to get involved in it, and you'll be an interesting guy to have that conversation with. So sit tight. We've got to take about a three-minute break. We'll be right back. More of All Marine Radio on a Tuesday coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue on a Tuesday. Mike McNamara with you, and privileged to be joined this morning by a contributing editor. Yeah, we found out what that was. A former Marine, got out as a sergeant, Alex Hollings. So, Alex, first of all, again, thanks for doing this. I read something that you wrote, and I thought it was pretty interesting. And then I read a little about you. When I saw the word Marine, I said, boom. He's a natural for All Marine Radio. Had a nice conversation, and very gracious to come on and do this. So come on and do this. So thank you very much.
Well, I got to tell you, thank you, man. It really is. It's a dream come true for me to know that people are out there reading the stuff that I'm working on. You know, I work inside a bubble here in my home office. So, you know, it's great to know that there's people out there on the other end of the screen, you know?
All right, give me your thoughts about journalism. It's something that we talk about a lot here, and we're confused by it, to be honest with you. What it looks like, how it comes to Americans can be pretty confusing.
Well, you know, I think that one of the biggest challenges we face kind of in a modern America is that question. You know, what exactly is journalism? You know, we were talking about clickbait before the break. And, you know, the classic example of clickbait is something that says, you know, you'll never believe what happens next. But I think kind of a broader definition of clickbait would be anything that kind of unfairly tries to manipulate you into an emotional response. You know, when it comes to especially, you know, websites, whether it's SoftRep or CNN, you know, the revenue really comes from clicks. You know, we're not asking the readers for money per se, we're asking for their time. You know? And
we lost him. Hold on 1 second. Are you back, Alex?
Hey, sorry about that. No. My phone cut out on me.
No. I thought it was me.
But as I was saying, you know, what we're really looking for is a reader's time, you know, and then the revenue comes from ads on a lot of these free sites. You know, SoftRep uses subscriptions, so it's a slightly different platform. Right. But ultimately, what we're really trying to get you to do is just click your mouse, you know. And a few years ago, somebody had the bright idea that if you can fool someone into clicking the mouse, it equals the same value as if they had clicked on it because they were genuinely interested in the content. And, you know, when it comes to a call to action, nothing works better than anger. You know, people aren't often going to be tempted to click on something just because they're like, oh, that seems nice. You know, people will happily click on something or share something if they've got something to say about it, you know. And anger is the easiest emotion to kind of manipulate when it comes to that. And as a result, we've got a media that's kind of centered around trying to elicit a negative emotional response every day, you know. I'm on the mainstream media sites every day looking for updates to stories, you know. If I'm writing about North Korea, there's not a lot of better avenues to learn more about North Korea than a lot of the mainstream outlets. You know, you kind of have to sift through some of the garbage. But there's good information in that. You know, there's good gouge to be found on CNN or on Reuters. You just kind of have to, you know, you have to be a little picky about how you go about it. And I think a big part of that is because we've kind of turned this corner towards it's more important to get your click or to get your view or to get you to watch for 40 more seconds than it is to actually relay any kind of really valuable content. You know, and I think we saw that a lot during this last presidential election where, you know, we had two candidates that maybe a lot of people couldn't really get behind.
Right.
But over the course of the election, they kind of got degraded into caricatures of themselves. You know, Donald Trump may not be a very articulate public speaker, but, you know, he isn't all of the things that he's made out to me. Hillary Clinton, you know, I might not have been a big fan of Hillary Clinton, but she wasn't all of the things she was made out to be either, because we were tempted to boil everything down into a snippet
right.
that we can throw in a headline for BuzzFeed and can get, you know, a whole bunch of clicks. A great example being when BuzzFeed leaked those documents that, you know, claims that Donald Trump had, you know, had a bunch of prostitutes come to urinate on, you know, the bed that the Obamas slept in Moscow.
Right.
You know, it turned out that it was a non-story. But what was more important to BuzzFeed at the time was the exposure it would get them, was the number of clicks that it would get them. You know, and we ran a story on SoftRep. We ran two or three stories pertaining to it, the whole time saying, these are the allegations being levied against Donald Trump. You know, but it's important to note that there isn't any substantial evidence to support it. And we still had a huge backlash from a lot of our subscribers that were saying, you know, we don't come to you guys to hear about what you think could be true. We come to you guys to hear about what is true. You know, and it prompted a debate within SoftRep as well, where we were trying to decide, what is it that we need to cover? What is it that we, you know, ignoring a story is a conscious decision in and of itself. You know, ignoring a story is making a statement as well. You know,
right.
So we have to kind of try to balance, in all honesty, the need to drive those clicks with the need to produce good content. And I think that's what's great about the subscriber platform SoftRep has, is that not every one of my stories needs to be one that's going to get shared 10,000 times on Facebook. Occasionally that happens, and that's great. But what's more important is that I'm given good content that people are willing to pay to read, as opposed to just kind of throwing something out there in hopes of getting a click. I don't think that's the answer for journalism in general, obviously, but something's going to need to change systemically. And I think it's going to have to be internal. Eventually, it's going to have to be that the public isn't willing to put up with more sensationalism. And they really want to know, all right, are we really going to go to war with North Korea, or is this just 3 weeks straight of rhetoric and headlines that don't amount to anything? You know, and it's in a lot of these sites' best interest to increase the perception that we're going to go to war with China or with North Korea.
First yeah,
of all,
are you kidding me?
The
Situation Room, man, if combat was as breathless as the Situation Room, nobody would be able to do it because it's too crazy. right?
Agreed.
The Situation Room, you know, things breaking every second. It's a crazy place. So I think it serves the democracy poorly because, where do you go to get, so let me ask you as a journalist, where do you go to get the truth?
To be honest with you, a lot of times I try going to people I know in the area, you know, or I try to use my network of connections to find a person who knows a person. You know, for instance, a Marine that I served with back in 29 Palms, she's married to a Marine who's currently deployed to Syria. You know, he's a grunt in Syria working security for the artillery guys that are there, you know, in support of anti-ISIS operations. And, you know, I'll go to her, in all honesty, sometimes before I'll go to CNN, because I know that CNN doesn't have anything new to add to the story today. They just have to have six new stories on the front page at 5 a.m.
Right.
So a lot of times it's repackaged yesterday's news, you know, with maybe one new tidbit that's a quote from, you know, some Syrian official that is neither here nor there, you know. But if I go to the people that I know and I say, can you tell me the truth about this? Like, for instance, after that Tomahawk missile strike on Assad's airbase, you know, there was immediately lots of concern about backlash against U.S. forces in Syria,
right.
You know.
Right.
And justifiably so. You know, so we obviously in country took precautions that were intended to, you know, to secure them and make sure that they were safe. But the real question I had was, what is the information that's getting to the infantry guys on the ground in Syria right now?
Right.
You know, I mean, I know that that's not necessarily the full story because, you know, the infantry guy on the ground only hears what he needs to hear. But if he's in danger, he'll know before CNN does. You know, and, so if at all possible, I try my best to either go through my own network of people that I've met throughout my time in the Marine Corps,
okay,
or through the networks of other guys that write for Sofrep, that they may not be as tied to the story as I am, but they may know a guy who knows a guy. You know, Derek Gannon is one of the writers on Sofrep. His sources are incredible. This guy, you know, immediately after the Yemen raid, you know, he was able to break the story of what the raid was about, you know, who the players were involved, and that's not, in all honesty, just because he's a great writer, though he is. The reality of it is that the people that you know are the real value you have as a journalist. You know, and if you rely, I'm not going to say I don't look for sources of the mainstream media, but if you rely only on the mainstream media, you end up just kind of regurgitating the same story that may or may not be entirely accurate. You know, I think that people tell their stories much better than a synopsis you can get off of Reuters, you know, if at all possible.
Well, and again, and Reuters would be one of the higher end ones too, right?
Oh, they're good. In all honesty, they're one of the better sources, if you ask me.
Right. You know what? I agree with you. You know, if you Reuters, you says when you look at CNN, what do you think when you click on that?
In all honesty, you know, because I'm trained to look for bias, whether it's bias that I like or not,
right.
You know, like my politics a lot of times might align more with Fox News, but I understand that there's a perception affiliated with Fox News that if I use them as a source, it will make some people question what I'm writing.
Right.
And I try really hard to bring, I'm not going to say that I'm always objective, but I try to be honest when I'm not, you know? And, so if I'm writing an op-ed, I'll use sources from wherever I can find them. But to be honest with you, I'll look for sources on websites that I think aren't going to prompt someone to just dismiss what I have to say because they assume that I'm another pundit from a specific political camp, you know? Reuters is a great one for not having too much bias. Every once in a while, you can kind of feel it in there. But when I look at CNN, it's the same as Fox News, just from the other side.
Right.
You know? CNN exhibits just as much bias, if not more, than you'll get from an outlet like Fox News, but I would be willing to say that to a certain extent, Fox News is more honest about what they are. You know, they might not advertise that we're a conservative news outlet, but the perception of them is that they are a conservative news outlet, and they don't fight hard to get away from that.
And so, so contrast that then, based on what you said, with CNN. What is CNN?
CNN, I think that's much more dangerous because they try to portray themselves as objective. you know, and unbiased.
Right.
And that's not to say that all of the reporting on CNN is bad. There's plenty of good journalism that gets pushed through, you know, kind of the CNN tube. But to think that they don't have a bias is lying to yourself, you know? Everybody has a bias. And to be honest with you, more often than not, the bias is based on economics, more so than politics. You know, CNN has got a customer base of readers and viewers, and they're aware that customer base isn't going to respond well to news about what a good job Donald Trump did in, for instance, a State of the Union speech or right. something like that. Right. You know, people won't respond well to it, so they tend to not run it. If Donald
okay.
Trump does
So let me ask you this, and this is what I think is interesting. What about the truth? And what about being a reporter? A reporter to a journalist like yourself, the word reporter is different than it is to us. When I hear reporter, I think, oh, that's some guy that's going out there. Okay? And the word, he's our White House correspondent. Reporter, you know, there's kind of a sacred, you know, in the journalism profession. That person's going out there and they're getting the facts of the story, and their focus is on the truth, yes? But it seems like that we get further, like people get confused. Where do I find the truth? What is the truth? You know, how do I know it? How do we have a debate in a country when we can't even agree on the basic elements of fact?
You know, and I think that speaks to another problem that's running rampant right now, and that's how we feel the need to politicize every subject. You know, particularly in the media, journalists are very guilty of this. You know, we want to make science a political discussion. You know, we want to make a great example that, you know, the science march that went on, I believe, yesterday or the day before.
Right.
You know, with Bill Nye and Neil deGrasse Tyson were, you know, real big proponents of it. You know, I was speaking to my brother the other day, and he's like, you know, I really liked Bill Nye until he got all political. And I understand where he's coming from. At the same time, I don't think that he has. You know, I think that the stance that Bill Nye assumes has become a political one because, you know, our party's kind of picked teams. And now we tend to focus more on the teams than we do on the subject matter. You know, and that's very much the product of the way the media reports it now.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to go so far as to say that there was a time when politics was run with gentlemen and ladies.
Yeah,
you know, where you could cover a subject like climate change, and we could say, all right, is this real? Is this something that we need to be concerned about? You know, Vladimir Putin right now is expanding, you know, they're building three huge Russian military installations in the Arctic because he's very much under the impression that the vast majority of that ice is going to melt and it's going to become a huge waterway, which has got a huge amount of tactical value. And if we're not willing to acknowledge that that's a possibility, then we're not going to be prepared if the Russians do have, you know, a huge military presence north of us that we're not really prepared to handle. You know, and that's why I get concerned about politicizing literally every subject, is that because we become so concerned with our team winning that we put the blinders on when it comes to important topics like that. You know, and where there may not be 100% consensus and why climate change is happening, you know, you may not agree that it's man-made, but we all have to agree that Russian military installations just north of Canada is a problem for us. You know, we all should worry that they've got destroyers up there that now have, you know, because our American missile defense system is designed in a certain way. If we have Russian ships that are capable of launching missiles in every different part of the world, it becomes increasingly difficult for us to be able to shoot down their missiles if ever we needed to. Do I think that situation will happen? Very unlikely. But it's still something that we need to have plans for. And as long as we're politicizing this stuff instead of addressing it, I think we're doing ourselves a disservice.
Okay, so give us, we got 5 minutes left here. Give me a solution for the American people. Do we need veterans in the news business that start organizations like Credible News Network? This is one of my ideas. Kind of like would be a Drudge Report page run by Marine veterans who are journalists, who do what you say. I know credible sources, and you're only going to see vetted, credible sources and their content on this site. So if you're looking for quality reporting, you can come here, and we will give it to you. Some people will cater to the right. Some people cater to the left. We cater to the truth, and we know the truth because we know people in this profession that write the truth. And whether it's left, right, or center, we don't really care. We're just looking for people who write the truth. Is it going to take for a different brand of journalism, or do people have to just read as much as they can and sort it out themselves? How do you think this solves itself, or does it?
Well, you know, I think that it's a multifaceted problem, and it would require a multifaceted solution. But I think that what you're speaking to right there is a huge start. You know, these independent news agencies like Stoprep, I got to tell you, when they brought me on, nobody asked me what my political leanings were. You know, nobody asked me how I feel about President Trump, even though I came on at a time when we were really heavily covering the presidential election.
Right.
Because to Jack Murphy and to Desiree and to Brandon, they're not worried about my politics. They want me to be as objective as I possibly can be. My personal biases don't matter as long as I'm doing my job well, you know. But I think that a big part of it is, aside from the fact, I think we need more veterans in everything, particularly in local politics, but definitely in journalism. Another side of that is that the American public is going to have to start being a little bit better informed about the way that they take in their news. You know, we need to start allowing for a little bit of uncertainty, because as long as we need, you know, our headlines and our articles to read in a way that, like, this is the unequivocal fact, whether or not we can really support that, you know, pop culture is the lens through which we experience the world that we can't see from our house, right? And pop culture includes CNN just as much as it includes the new Avengers movie. It's all the way that we interpret the stuff that we can't see with binoculars. And as long as we're willing to accept news that's got a real bias, or as long as we're willing to accept these things that seem like concrete but in reality are just being, you know, misrepresented, you know, we're going to be running into this problem. What we really need is the American people to demand a better quality news. Otherwise, we're not going to get it. Because ultimately, it comes down to dollars and cents. And if people stop going to CNN because they're biased, or people stop going to Fox or what have you, they're going to have to change their methodology to get those readers back. So what we really need is we need people to start not tolerating crappy news. And, you know, once we can do that, which, you know, that's an uphill battle. But once we can do that, then I think we're going to be in a better place. I think that, again, the media will help support democracy instead of, you know, in recent years, it kind of seems like its main priority has been to tear it down.
So there does have to be alternatives. Because in my mind's eye, and you may be too young to remember this, is the McNeil Lear News Hour. And it was kind of a PBS-like, and then it had articulate discourse about important subjects. It was awesome stuff, and it wasn't left. It wasn't a lefty or a righty. You know, there were people that held both views, but it was articulate, measured discussion that was extremely enjoyable to listen to. So does that need to make a comeback?
Yeah, I think people would love it. You know, what I don't like about
I do too.
Really biased things is because I don't like being told what to think.
Right.
You know. And I love anything that'll present me multiple viewpoints and let me pick, you know. And I guess the problem really is that we've got to get past that clickbait culture. Clickbait not just being a term I'm using now for links, but for commercials, for shows.
Right.
We've got to get past that. You're never going to believe what happens when we brought this white supremacist onto the show.
Yep.
Guess what? He's a white supremacist. We all should have expected exactly what happened when Omar brought him onto the show. But people tuned in just because they want the novelty of it, you know? And we really need people to start looking for good quality content, because until there's a market for good quality content, we're not going to get it in large swaths. You're going to get, you know, the soft reps out there, you know, and the all-marine radios out there that are going to be willing to do this, but their platform is invariably going to be smaller than the big outlets,
right,
you know, until there's a market for good objective analysis.
All right. Now, will you come back on next week, and we'll talk about some of your content, because we talked about your career and a subject that I think the nation needs to discuss, and that is, you know, how we do news in this country. And I appreciate, and again, it's interesting to get your perspective, Alex, because, your perspective is very much this perspective of a veteran and a frustrated veteran, it sounds like, at times where you look at this and you're like, you got to be kidding me, man. People are coming to you looking for content, and this is what you're serving up? You know, it's just...
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's just so... I'll give you a call and come back on in a week.
I'd be happy to. Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. First of all, Alex, really appreciate you coming on and doing this morning, and have enjoyed the discussion, and good luck with your work at SoftRep, and we'll have you back on, and we'll keep doing this, man. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
All right. You too. Have a great day. That is, Alex, Hollings. He's a former Marine, and he's now a contributing editor at SoftRep.com. So you can check his work out there. SoftRep, you know, does what their name suggests they would do. Special ops guys doing a lot of the same that we do, but they're much further down the road, and financially they're off the hook, I think. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break. The gunner standing by, Montana guy standing by. So standing room only here on a Tuesday edition of Mac Talk right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. So sit back, relax, enjoy the morning, and we will endeavor to entertain this hour of All Marine Radio, brought to you by friends at Battle Mug, home of the one and only 10-pound milled machined and anodized with a serial number on it, Battle Mug. Picatinny rails on the side, make it perfect to take to the field. Put whatever you want to put on it that you can put on a weapon. Scope, light, laser, whatever you want to put on your mug, it can take it and goes to the field. You can have it in the base engraved if it's a gift to somebody, perfect for as a gift at a farewell, a promotion, or retirement. Check out the whole line of products, and there's a bunch of them, at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug's a veteran-owned and operated company made entirely in the United States. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.